Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Obviously, a big night last night for AEW as they held their Full Gear pay-per-view and crowned a brand new champion. We'll be getting into some talk about that, as well as more information and more controversy about some of the releases here in the WWE. And let's start with that first, because we have some new information and some conflicting information. First information we have is on Nia Jax, and from what we're being told, Nia Jax was on her way out the door several times. Nia Jax had been an issue with her sloppiness and some of her backstage antics, and even though she was very popular backstage, and people were saying she was a very nice person, and Vince McMahon himself apparently thought she was one of their better assets. The time had come when they felt that she was dogging it, and I'll tell you how they felt she was dogging it. She said she needed time off for some mental issues to revive herself mentally, I guess, put her head back in the game, a couple of years back. And now she did it again, and they granted her some time again. And when her time had come to join back up, and they had given her some information about when she was going to re-debut, she asked for more time yet. And according to her, the next thing she heard was she was released. Now, I'm going to be very honest with you. I'm not a huge fan. I thought she was somewhat dangerous in the ring, and I thought she proved that on many occasions. I also thought that she dogged it a lot. I thought that she wasn't very good at selling and seemed a bit lazy in the ring, and I thought she was riding the coattails of her relatives quite a bit. Be told, I think she knew she was doing that. And I think she thought she could do it to a much larger extent than she actually could. And when the time came and the WWE were going to make these cuts, they figured this time, I suppose. Now, there are some people like Doudrop. There are some people, other people who are saying, I think Becky Lynch said some good things about her, even though she busted her in the face. I think Shayna Baszler said some good things. I don't know. Several of the WWE women said some good things about her, and that they wish she hadn't been released. But in all honesty, I cannot blame the WWE for this release. I blame the WWE for a lot of these releases, and we're going to get to Keith Lee in a minute, but I don't blame them for this one. If Nia Jax has such a fragile mental state that she needs months and months off every year to adjust that mental state, but it's not so severe that she can't wrestle 7, 8, 9 months out of the year, I think that's called I want a longer vacation than everybody else. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe she legitimately has issues, but if she legitimately has issues, then she needs to address them before she gets back in the ring, period. I don't think it's fair to take a year's salary and say I need, you know, 2 6-month vacations. That's exaggerating a little bit, but you get my point. I don't think they were getting much for the Nia Jax investment, and I think they realized maybe with Doudrop in there, we don't necessarily need another big woman, and Doudrop is obviously much safer to work with. Seems to be a little more skilled, seems to be a little better at selling, and probably even better at using the mic. So the Nia Jax thing, we now know, was a long time coming, and she was saved by the bell more than one time, probably by Vince McMahon himself. So that's where we stand with Nia Jax, Mike. That was one of the releases when we announced them all that I honestly didn't disagree with.
Right, and that's and look, we basically said it was probably time for her to go. And, yeah, the locker room may have liked her, but that doesn't take away the fact that she's not particularly safe to work with. You know, from what we've seen now, according to what – I mean, look, the locker room can say what the locker room says, but, again, if she's not safe to work with, if she's breaking people's noses and faces and dropping people on their heads and all that stuff – like she was doing, then what, you giving her how many chances already before you ended up firing her? And then she comes up and says, well, I need all this time off because I've got mental issues. Well, again, what do you expect? I would have gotten rid of her a long time ago, but that's just me.
Yeah, I think that one, I don't know if WWE fans can argue too strenuously about that one. Now on to the Keith Lee one, because we found some fascinating stuff out. Keith Lee had apparently tweeted saying it was his birthday, but it wasn't particularly a happy birthday. But he was still grateful to be here because several months ago it looked like he might not be. He was talking about his bout with COVID. And then he said something very odd. He said, despite what people may think, I paid all of my medical bills myself. The WWE has lashed back at this and said that is untrue. Keith Lee is covered by the same medical care that all the WWE athletes was covered with. And if he has any dispute about any of his medical bills, he should contact the WWE because he was under the same exact medical care plan than anybody else was, meaning they took care of the bill. I don't know who's telling the truth. It seems to me very unlikely that Keith Lee would get on Twitter and say, I paid all of my own medical expenses if he didn't. But at the same time, the WWE, who never comments once someone is released, they never really comment, took the time to say, that's not true. And it's very hard for me to believe they would say that if it was so easily able to be discovered that they didn't pay. So this is a real mystery here. Keith Lee seems to think he paid his own bills. The WWE seems to think they paid them for him. And I don't know. At this stage of the game, Todd, it's very hard to say who's telling the truth in this matter.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, we don't know who is telling the truth, if it's the WWE or Keith Lee, one of those two. It's one of those tricky things. You can't even figure out who's lying or telling the truth or anything.
I would have to say, and listen, I've met Keith Lee and talked to Keith Lee a few times, and he seems like a really upstanding, smart guy who wouldn't say anything if it wasn't true, but maybe he's under a misunderstanding. Maybe his medical bills got double dipped somehow. If they thought he was in good financial state, maybe they double dipped him. I do not believe that the WWE would respond to this so quickly and so vehemently, Mike, if they knew they didn't pay them.
Well, but then again, Marcus, this is the same company that did not pay for Viscera's funeral when they probably should have. So I don't know.
You're right.
Different things, but you know.
You're right, but I mean, they didn't claim they did either, though. I mean, the WWE immediately made a statement saying, "We absolutely covered Keith Lee's medical bills." Why would they say that when anyone could check that? You know.
Right, and my question is, if Keith Lee can produce the receipts on him paying the bills himself, that the WWE, no matter what they say, is up a creek without a paddle.
Yeah, unless he got double dipped, you know, unless they said we're charging the insurance and then we're charging him too. Or maybe Keith Lee was under the mistake that maybe he has some kind of deductible. I don't know. I don't know what this situation is, but I'm very curious to find out. Because it could just be a misunderstanding where Keith Lee has paid a certain amount of money and that was what he was obligated to pay, and he somehow thinks that was all of it when it wasn't. Or the WWE is just flat out lying. But again, if the WWE had said nothing and somebody asked them the question, why didn't you pay for Keith Lee's medical bills? And they said he was under the same program everybody else was. It's the way it is. I would have said, well, that's their way of getting around it. But when they actually respond to an actual tweet, that they'd never do that. You know, they've had people say horrible things about the WWE. They gave me my stuff back in a garbage bag. They fired me on my birthday or my wedding day or whatever. They never responded. This is the first time I've ever heard the WWE actually respond and say, this isn't true. So it makes me think that it is true. And if it is, I don't know what impression Keith Lee is under. I really don't. And it's a shame it had to end this way, because I think the WWE is one of these weird companies that could fire you this month and 5 months down the road hire you again. I really do. I think they're one of them type of companies. But if you're going to cause big problems, then they're probably not going to. And I think that Keith Lee might have been smarter to just let this rest. Because if he does, in fact, find out, if we do find out, yes, the WWE paid the medical bills, it's not going to look good. It's just not going to look good. And because he came out and said that, the WWE is going to be like, well, you tried to make us look bad. So if they did have any intention down the road, and remember, look how fast they hired Samoa Joe back. Look how fast they hired Drake Maverick back. So it can happen. It's just a very unusual case. I'm not really sure where to go from there. As far as Lince Dorado, him and his partner asked for requested their release. So there's one off of the WWE's list as far as that's concerned. If they wanted their release and they got it, you can't blame the WWE for it. The ones now that leave me scratching my head the most, besides Keith Lee, is Karrion Kross. I don't know why you bothered to bring him up, promote him the way you did. And as far as BFAB is concerned, we have new information on that too. Apparently someone who I guess is going to remain nameless in the WWE offices assured Vince McMahon she is an unnecessary part of this clique. These guys can do fine without her. As a matter of fact, we think that the girl being there kind of dragged them down. It's better if it's just the three guys. And I guess the WWE agreed, Todd. I personally don't agree with that.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, the girl in Hit Row, they shouldn't have fired her in the first place. I would not fire her. I would have kept her. They were doing fine. They were doing fine on NXT. I thought they were going to do fine on the main roster with those four.
Yeah, and I don't think it takes away from them at all to have her be their quote-unquote leader, if that's what you wanted to call her. But I guess, Mike, from what I'm hearing, a couple of people backstage got in Vince McMahon's ear and said they thought it took away from the team rather than added to it, and that's what caused the firing.
Well, my thing with this is, in my mind, they broke what did need to be fixed because it was working, you know, and my thing is, you go back to the time in NXT when they were going against Legado El Fantasma,
right.
Those three guys and a woman, and it was a good thing. It was a good feud, and it worked, and the two women worked well together, and all that stuff. So yeah, they broke again. This is a perfect case of them breaking what didn't need to be. You know, fixing what did need to be broken. or whatever, however it's called, because that's exactly what they did. They broke something that didn't need to be broken.
Yeah, and again, it's this is this micromanagement. That this is this exact same mentality, I'm telling you, that drive these producers and directors to change major parts of superhero movies and remakes and say, I'm going to make it my own. I'm going to put my stamp on it, and then I become known for it. That's what these guys want. You bring up a package from NXT, and their producers backstage say, well, I didn't have anything to do with this. So I'm going to change it so that I do have something to do with it. And then if I have something to do with it and it's successful, I'll look great. They can't just leave it alone. They all got to put their fingerprints on it, and that's where the main problem comes. They all got to put their fingerprints on something, and like Mike said, they got to try to fix something that isn't broke to begin with. Because, oh, well, I didn't have any hand in its creation. So if they become successful now, whoever said they don't need BFAB is going to say, see, we told you. Yeah, but the deal is you don't know how much more you could have done if she stayed. You have no idea. You've kind of taken that part of it out because, of course, you have a woman's division, and she could have actively been a part of that. You have other things you could have done. There was a lot you could do with a faction that has a female in it as opposed to just the three males. So I disagree with this. I just think it's, again, it's micromanagement. It's everybody saying, I got to add my own little stamp to it. I got to put my signature on this. I want to change this just for the sake of changing it so they say I did something. See, if I'm working as a producer backstage and they bring them up and I say, nothing for me to do. They're perfect the way they are. Just let them go out there and do what they do. Then maybe I think to myself, well, if I do that too much, they're going to say they don't need me. If I don't improve this somehow, if I don't change this somehow, if I don't make suggestions and tamper with it, they're going to say, well, why do we need you? We don't need you to just say, hey, they're perfect the way they are. So I think that's what ends up happening a lot with WWE, Mike, is these guys feel the need to micromanage everything and put their own stamp on it.
And here's something else that I think it is, too. They were a creation of Triple H.
Yep.
All right? You know, I mean, tell me I'm wrong. You know, this was a Triple H thing, right?
Yeah.
And then they change, they bring them up, and they bring them up to where Triple H probably doesn't have much to do with it anymore. And so there you go. And look, we could see where this was headed. I mean, look, we could see where it's headed with Naomi and the Bloodline, and we could see where that after Naomi joins the Bloodline, we could have seen that you could have had a Bloodline versus, you know, feud there, you know? I mean, you got a big guy and two tag team guys, and there you go.
Yeah, you would have thought that it wrote itself, but, you know, it's only speculation on my part, but Triple H and Vince McMahon, and Triple H at one time held a lot of weight in this company, so much weight in this company that many people said to me, yeah, Vince still does okay, but Triple H is really almost completely in charge, even in the WWE. He has such a large voice, and he has Vince McMahon's ear to the point where pretty much whatever Triple H says goes. Something happened, because that is not the case at all. And Triple H was demoted. Now, they say, oh, it wasn't demotion. It was just a change of his title, and it was only because we wanted to bring people. Nah, something's wrong. I sense that something's wrong. And now that Triple H had some medical issues and had to undergo surgery and things, he right now isn't actively, you know, apart. It seems to me that Vince McMahon and company are kind of like phasing him out and saying, well, you go do your NXT thing. And even that, they took a little bit away from him. So I don't know what to tell you. I've heard nothing as far as was there a falling out, but something's wrong because it's not the same as it was years ago. I really see that Triple H was kind of writing all this and getting, you know, his nose in all of it involved. You could clearly see that happening. Now I don't see it at all. As a matter of fact, the very things, like Mike said, that he creates that is successful, they tend to destroy. So it's very weird. I don't know where that's going, but that's That's very weird, very unusual. Anyway, before we get into the full gear, let's talk a little bit about SmackDown. SmackDown was not a good show, folks. Was not a good show. I mean, you can put the lipstick on the pig all you want and say, well, some things happened. Xavier Woods, they're really using him. He's looking better. Okay. But this show reeked. It just reeked. I mean, you literally had a beginning of a show where you just had a bunch of women standing in the ring. Poor Aaliyah didn't even get any kind of nothing. But here she is. Didn't get a video package, didn't get anything. Just, here I am. And I'm just one of the members. For whatever reason, I'm one of the Survivor Series team members. It ends up into a six-man match where Naomi, who's not even involved, comes down and she gets in it. It was just a nightmare. And every single solitary Survivor Series team has the same exact plot line. How in the world will these teams get along without it breaking down into a brawl? Every team. That's boring. Later on, we get Sami Zayn, who, why would he be included in a Survivor Series team when he's won absolutely nothing? Why would he be included? And Jeff Hardy just showed up from Raw. And Sami Zayn is giving a pep talk in a mirror or whatever he's doing. Jeff Hardy's watching him and says, well, that was just terrible. It was just awful. Like, Jeff Hardy cuts a great promo, right? We get that match, which Jeff Hardy wins. None of these matches seem to have any energy or any fuel behind them at all. And the one that would, which, of course, was Roman Reigns versus Xavier Woods, they added the stipulation, should Roman Reigns lose this match, he will bow before King Xavier, right? But if he wins the match, to do the same. He doesn't win the match. Now, here's the deal. This is a guy who pinned Brock Lesnar. He can't beat Xavier Woods without help from the Usos. He can't beat Xavier Woods. I mean, I've heard of weakening and slightly downplaying a character. But come on. If you can't beat Xavier Woods at this point, and you're supposed to be the top guy, the very top guy, I don't want to tell you. Should have been different than it was. This should have been Roman Reigns pretty much dominating the match, perhaps being very egotistical and not covering Woods when he should have and clearly had him want winning and clearly whatever. And when he overdoes it and beats Woods up a little bit too much, the referee says, that's it, you're disqualified. Then Roman saying, I'm not bowing before him because look at him, he's a sack of crap now. I beat the hell out of him. Think I'm going to bow before some guy? Does he look like the winner? That would have at least been, okay, well, it was clear Roman Reigns was winning this match. It was clear that Xavier Woods was outdone. And it's very clear that Roman Reigns is not going to keep his promise. No, instead, the way you had this booked, Roman Reigns was about to lose that match. Xavier Woods was about to beat Roman Reigns. Now, take nothing away from Xavier Woods' talent. I'm not. I'm just saying he's not booked to be that. He is not booked and hasn't been booked to be a guy who's a serious challenge to Roman Reigns when Brock Lesnar couldn't beat him. So I'm sorry to tell you that that made no sense and it weakened Roman Reigns' character tremendously. Tremendously. I just don't see, Mike, how this helped in any way, shape, or form anything to do with the Roman Reigns angle.
Right. I don't get it either. And the thing is, you know, it doesn't make sense to have that stipulation. But if you're going to do that, then fine, pull the trigger on Xavier Woods somehow winning that match. Because him bowing in front of Roman Reigns doesn't make sense. Somebody bows in front of a king, right? I mean, that's logical. That makes sense. You know, so this whole thing, this whole match, this whole situation did not make logical sense. It wasn't logical.
Well, it's especially not logical the way they did it. I mean, if you wanted to stick to the stipulation and have it work out, I think they should have done what I said, which is just to have Roman Reigns beat up Xavier Woods so bad and refuse to pin him, where the referee is literally saying, if you do not pin him, if you do not finish this match, I'm disqualifying you. You're not just going to sit here and keep picking him up and beating him up and beating him up. And at some point, Roman Reigns says, you, I'll do what I want. And the referee says, okay, I won't do it. You're disqualified. That's it. Then if you had Roman Reigns bow before the lifeless body of Xavier Woods, almost in, you know, satirically saying, oh, I bow before you. What a great king, you know, as he's laying there, belly up. We get it. That gets good heat for Roman. And it makes Roman look like, well, he definitely handled Xavier Woods. You know, Xavier Woods is good. He's not Roman Reigns good. And somebody much tougher is going to have to come along to deal with Roman Reigns. No, that's not what he did. What you did was make it look like, well, Xavier Woods was a heartbeat away, and if the Usos hadn't been there, Xavier Woods would have beat the champion. Okay, well, all of a sudden, Xavier Woods is invincible. All of a sudden, Xavier Woods is tougher than Brock Lesnar. I don't get this. You spend all this time building up Roman Reigns, and then he pretty much has to lose to a guy that you, up until very recently, was just using as a tag team guy and not even winning as a tag team. Not even winning all that much as a tag team. Now, all of a sudden, he is of Roman Reigns quality. That does not make sense. Had you done it the way I said, you still would have said, well, look, Woods gave him hell for 5, 6, 8 minutes. But then, very clearly, Roman Reigns took over. And Roman Reigns just beat the F out of him. And then to add insult to injury, when he's laying there in a heap, he is victorious by disqualification. He's laying there in a heap. Roman bows before him sarcastically and mocks him, you know, makes a mockery out of it. That would have gotten him a lot more heat, Todd, and I think it would have made a lot more sense than what they did.
I mean, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it makes a lot more sense with this whole thing with this Roman Reigns thing with Xavier Woods.
I just don't, I don't know. I just don't know if the WWE understands anymore, Mike, how you really do build up heat and you really do build up a character to the point where fans think, you know, they're pretty close to invincible. Somebody very special is going to have to come along to beat them.
Right, you're right on that, Marcus. And think about this, you know, this whole show, this whole SmackDown show, right? Look at it. Yeah, I like the fact that and we'll get around to that Charlotte addressed the whole situation. But I don't want to do it, but I got to compare this show to what happened only minutes after this show went off the air. All right, with Rampage. Rampage is what? A go-home show, and it was a very good show. Match was good. The promos were good. Everything about Rampage was good, whereas everything about SmackDown was not. So, again, if Tony Khan just shuts his mouth and the WWE keeps having shows like this, the WWE's in trouble.
Yeah, see, the thing is, well, they've each got problems. Both of these federations have problems, but they're very different problems. The problems that the WWE has, AEW does not have. And the problems that AEW has, the WWE does not have. It's very interesting how, so it really depends on your perspective. You know, which is worse? Which is a worse problem? We're going to get to the AEW thing in a moment. But, yeah, you're right. Listen, Charlotte Flair came out and somewhat addressed the situation. But, God, that was a bad promo. Trying to get the audience to rename Becky, whatever the hell it was. It didn't. Why would the fans be on Charlotte's side instead of Becky's side? They're not going to be. They're not going to be. Fans just wanted to chant anything, so they were just going along with it. Charlotte, to me, really feels like she's going through the motions at this point. I don't know how this match is going to turn out. I'll be very interested in it. But past this match, whatever happens, I don't see what they're going to do with Charlotte that's going to make the fans care one way or the other. There are some people who have just worn out their welcome. Sometimes it happens. And it's tough to say exactly why. Some people say, well, because she was given everything on a silver platter. Well, that's not true, because so was Roman Reigns, and he hasn't worn out his welcome. People love this new character. Randy Orton's been around for years. He hasn't worn out his welcome. But there are certain athletes that after a while you say, I just don't care anymore. I'm not saying they're not a great athlete. I'm not saying they don't perform well in the ring. I'm not saying that they're not professional or they don't do their job. There's just something about them that screams, eh, I don't care anymore. And unfortunately, I think Charlotte's reached that point, Todd.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, like we said for a while now, she's getting to that point. She just don't want to be there and everything. She's like she's not really happy where she's at right now in the WWE.
That's what it feels like. It feels like someone who is not really happy where she is, Mike, and she's going through the motions because her contract says she has to, and she's not going to do anything extra one way or the other.
Right, and think about this. You know, okay, you got rid of Andrade. All right, fine, whatever. His contract come up. That was, I think, what's happening is because her comfort zone is gone. You know, she said, I'll do whatever. I'll do just enough to get it over with, but no more, you know. I mean, once they fired Rick, I think that's when things in her mind clicked.
Feels that way, doesn't it? I mean, it feels like that was the straw that broke the camel's back, because it hasn't been the same since that. There's no question about it. So let's get on to a little bit of AEW in full gear before we get started with some of the results and some analysis of some of the matches, at least. Let me give you my thought of what AEW's problem is. AEW's problem is that they have been the kid in the candy store. They've been the kid that got, you know, $20 bill for Christmas from his grandma and went into a candy store and went freaking nuts and bought every single piece of candy they could possibly pack into the bag for $20, and then realized, I can't really enjoy all of the candy. Put a bunch of smaller amount and then come back later and buy some more. This feels like what AEW has done. As I was watching Full Gear, I'm saying to myself, this is a 4.5-hour pay-per-view. So number one, I don't hear anybody complain about WrestleMania anymore being long. 4.5 hours is a tremendously long period of time for wrestling. Tremendously long. Too long. Too long. Number two, I'm looking at their roster saying in 4.5 hours they couldn't pack everybody into it. In 4.5 hours they had to do plenty of tag team matches and other things, and still people were left off the card. Still people have really not much to do. And they're going to hire more? Somebody's going to get cut. Their time is going to go down to zero, or the matches are going to get shorter. Something's got to change, because you can't have 100 people on your roster and do 12 matches a week. It just doesn't work. There are going to be people who are just left out, or they're seen so infrequently, it's like, well, you were seen last week, therefore we don't have to show you this week. We're going to show a whole new group of people this week. And you're like, yeah, but then people forget about the angles from last week. And we are starting to get into that territory with AEW, that they're just overcrowded. They have way, way, way too much talent and not enough time to use it. And as I'm watching Full Gear, I'm saying to myself, as long as this pay-per-view is, where's so-and-so? Where's this person? Where's that person? They're left out of the party. And they can't be happy. Or some of these people who thought they were going to be a big deal, I'm going to be a very top guy, one of the top, top, top guys, get to the Federation, they don't win that much. And they're not really a top guy. They're the opposite of a top guy. So let's talk a little bit about this. I mean, let's face it. Andretti came over here saying, I'm going to have creative control and creative freedom. I'm going to be able to do X, Y, and Z. Andretti's done exactly nothing. He's done exactly nothing. He's no better off in AEW than he was in WWE at all. And Malakai Black, who had this big, big buildup, he's going to be the big name that we signed. Right after that, they signed more and more and more and more people and kind of buried his name. And now this is a guy who's struggling to beat Cody Rhodes. As a matter of fact, he beat him in his debut and then lost. And now they've lost again. Him and Andretti in the tag team, they've lost again. Malakai Black's starting to feel like a guy who's going to be middle of the pack. And I got news. Middle of the pack is not what Aleister Black or Malakai Black, whatever you want to call him, that is not what he thought he was going to get. With all of this big buildup and everything like that, he thought he was going to be a very top performer. And I don't see it, Mike. What I see is too much talent and not enough time. So you're going to have these guys that you think should be top dog or were told they were going to be top dog end up being middle of the pack.
Right, and think about this. What did they do in the middle of that pay-per-view? They introduced Jay Lethal. You know? And think about it. Where's he? What's he going to be? When we know what he was in he was a top dog in Ring of Honor and somewhat in Impact, but what's he gonna be in a few months? You know, they made a big deal of introducing him now, but what's he gonna be? What's Jay Lethal gonna be? Where is he gonna be?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to get to. And now with Ring of Honor pretty much closing shop, there are people saying, oh, no, they're going to come back. I don't see it. And if they have closed up shop, Tony Khan is the first guy to say, yes, we're very interested in these people. Oh, WWE's let a bunch of people go. Yes, we're very interested in those people. I'm telling you, he's the kid in the candy store with a $20 bill. At some point, you cannot have all of it because you got no room for it. And then what ends up happening is you say, well, these guys are seen once a month. Well, once a month ain't going to get them over. See, this is starting to feel like an indie federation because this is what happens with an indie federation. And everybody who goes to the indies knows it. You have a guy there for one show. And he's real good. And you're like, oh, wow, I like that guy. I hope I see him again. And maybe you don't. Maybe, you know, they hold a show once a month and you say, oh, well, every third month or fourth month he shows up. But you never get a really good feel for him because he's not there that much. So there's never anything you can do with him. That's why the indies were all about individual matches and not about storylines, because you can't really do a storyline in the indies with guys who you're not sure can show up next time. So you say to yourself, we're not doing storylines really. We're kind of just doing individual matches. So-and-so is going to fight so-and-so, and they're both good, so that'll be a good match. Great, but there's no real story behind it. I'm starting to feel that way about some, not all, but some of the AEW rosters. They're never going to have a storyline for them. They're just going to be guys that you say, oh, they're going to be in a match. Okay, that'll be a good match. That's very indie. Now, you did a great job, obviously, of building up Hangman Page and Kenny Omega. That took a long time. There was a lot of storyline behind that. That's good. And there's nothing wrong with the way that was handled. Nothing at all. But you can't do that with this many people. And now we're seeing, okay, you got Daniel Bryan and Miro. Well, Miro takes the loss again. How many losses before Miro says, hey, Miro's not special anymore? Yeah, Miro's angle is eh. And then what does Miro do? This is the problem AEW has. Tony Khan got overexcited and he overbought. You know, maybe the candy description is not as good as maybe you bought too many Christmas decorations, you know? Maybe you say, oh, I went out and bought all kinds of Christmas decorations, and pretty soon you're like, well, I'm going to have to hang this on the back of the Christmas tree where nobody sees it. And you're like, well, what's the bloody point of having bought it? Nobody's even going to see it. That's sort of what I'm feeling with AEW, Todd, is that they've overbought, and now they're trying to keep their commitment to so many people – And they just can't.
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, with some of these guys, who the roster is too big. It's, the federation is too big for the guys to be on the roster and everything. Some guys should go to Impact Wrestling. They got a smaller roster of guys, a smaller roster than AEW.
I would much rather have a small roster of guys who are being used to their full capacity in storylines that matters. In other words, you're using every aspect of we need you guys than I would be in a federation of 10 of our guys could go down tomorrow and we still got plenty of guys. We don't really need you. Well, if you don't really need them, why are they there? That's kind of what the WWE was doing for a while. And now the WWE's kind of cutting that. Problem with the WWE's, they're getting rid of people they could use and keeping people that they have no use for, which that doesn't make any sense either. But, I mean, is the world going to fall apart if I could name you 10, 12, 14 guys getting big, fat AEW contracts that if tomorrow they weren't there, you wouldn't even miss them. You wouldn't even know it. And then you have the danger of if you're building up younger talent, you've got to be very careful that they don't lose too much. Now, with MJF and Darby Allin, MJF, I think, was probably the logical winner, but Darby Allin hasn't won much. Darby Allin had his feud with CM Punk, didn't win that. We knew he wasn't winning that. We know he's not winning this one with MJF, but you start to say to yourself, well, wait a minute. You gave Sting a big fat contract to kind of boost Darby Allin. And instead of boosting Darby Allin, he's virtually losing every match now, Mike.
You're right. You know, and look, I'll put it to you this way. We're talking about what his problem, the AEW's problem is. And I know this isn't a political show, but in a political show, there's a particular type of bill that they call a Christmas tree bill. You have a bill, and they try to hang amendments on it, and they hang, and then they get to the point of where they try to put a star on top of the tree, and the tree topples over, and the bill doesn't get passed. So that's what we're getting here with AEW is the Christmas tree thing, you know. They've gotten too many people. Now, granted, I still think they could add maybe two more women to the women's division. That's fine. But the men, you got too many people. Okay, you know, you got too many people, and they now have also, I mean, Leo Rush is there too. So, you know.
Yeah, it's and now what? Jay Lethal's going to be there, and maybe they're saying we might hire Keith Lee, and maybe we may hire Karrion Kross. At what point do you say, well, to do what? You just hired Adam Cole in this whole thing, and you got the super clique going, and they lost. The problem is, remember the old heyday of WWE, and they'd introduce a character. They'd say, coming soon, Skinner, or coming soon, Ludwig Borga, or coming soon, Razor Ramon. And they'd build it up for about a month, and then they'd show up. And it's a big deal because you're like, oh, this is the guy I'm hearing about. And they'd give that a good another month, maybe 2 months, and then they'd do it with another guy. But they wouldn't do it with six guys at the same time. When you signed Aleister Black, all of a sudden it was Aleister Black and Adam Cole and this one and that one and this one. And you're like, well, wait a minute. It's like fireworks going off. We weren't even able to see Aleister Black's full potential of rising up to the very top of the chain. And then when you start to ease him down, you introduce another guy. No, it was all at once. So now you're throwing all these guys out there and you're like, well, somebody's got to lose. I mean, when you had seen Razor Ramon first come in, you're like, he ain't losing for a while. And you'd see him tear the head off local talent, and then he'd move up to mediocre WWE regulars, and then he'd move up to middle ground WWE regulars, and then he'd move up to the higher middle ground WWE wrestlers. Then you'd hear he's taking on Bret Hart or he's taking on this guy, and you're like, well, now that is not going to be a walk in the park. I got to see that match. That's how you built it up. Nowadays, it's just like, here comes, you know, Bryan Danielson, he's going to fight Miro. Okay, well, there was no buildup. There was no nothing. You don't even have the chance to do it because there's just too many people. problem for AEW. I know some AEW fans say, I think it's great. Well, you're not going to think it's great when some of these guys say, hey, I'm not on TV too much. I don't even feel like I'm a part of this federation. I'm going to go somewhere where I'm on TV every week as opposed to once a month. And you're not going to like it when some of these guys say, you know, I signed a big contract here, but Sting signed a bigger one. He doesn't do anything. And even the guy he's managing is losing every week. What am I supposed to do? Where do I fit into this package? You cannot put 50 pounds of potatoes in a 25-pound bag, no matter how hard you try. And that's what I think AEW's problem is. Now, did they put on a great pay-per-view? Yes, this pay-per-view was very good, very strong. There's a couple matches I did not like, and there was a couple of decisions I did not like. I don't think you let Aleister Black and Andrade lose. I just don't. Especially when you have the built-in excuse that Cody Rhodes may not get along with his tag team partner. Neville and him coexisting, what's the point? What's the point? You had a built-in storyline. You had a built-in angle to make sure that Aleister Black and Andrade go over. Andrade's won nothing. Black's won like a match or two. He is now like one win and two losses against Cody Rhodes and one in a tag team match. Does that make Aleister Black a star? No. No, it doesn't. How is he top of the heap? He's not. Comes in with his badass gimmick, and he doesn't win much. He's not going to win much. Adam Cole just gets his foot in the door, and his faction loses. Miro was a big deal until they signed Bryan Danielson and CM Punk and Aleister Black, and now Miro's like, yeah, well, we had plans for you, but unfortunately, we need to designate that time to some other guys now. See, that's the thing. If you only just had Miro still, you'd still be using them. You'd be like, well, we got to use them. So we're going to push and push and push them. But now that you got CM Punk and you got Bryan Danielson and you got Adam Cole and you got Aleister Black and you're going, they got Jay Lethal, these guys like Miro, they're going to say, well, I don't know. I mean, we kind of did what we could do with you. Where are they left? I don't see – this is a problem. I know that AEW fans don't think it is, but truly it is, Mike, because at some point, for every guy that you sign, a match or some TV time is going to be taken away from some guy who was promised it.
Right, and think about it this way. You know, I'm almost to the point of saying, you know, if I'm Killer Cross and I'm looking at AEW and I'm saying, well, where am I going to get my shot, you know? And I'm saying, oh, maybe I should just bite the bullet and go on back to Impact, you know, because in Impact, right, you're gonna get a shot, you know.
Yep. See, you know, I agree with that philosophy. I agree with you 100%, Mike. Here's the underlying factor. They're not going to pay that kind of money. See, this is the thing. Some of these wrestlers are going to say, well, I really don't care. I'll lose every match as long as you sign that big fat paycheck. I don't care. I guess. But weren't you the guys who were saying, I want to do more. WWE's not letting me do what I can do. They were signing a big fat paycheck too. So if that's your philosophy that I just want to make money and I don't really give a damn whether they use me or they don't use me, whether I lose or whether I win, you may as well have stayed right where you were. They were giving you a nice big fat paycheck. And you were probably getting seen by more people. So I don't know, man. I what I see is the AEW strongly mirroring some of the indies when it comes to their ideology. Now, they do have some storylines. Like I said, the Adam Page, Hangman Page, and Kenny Omega storyline was a long time coming. They built it up very well. They concluded it very well, even to the point of Hangman Page throwing down the beer. All of that is very, very important, and it was handled extremely well. And whoever did most of the writing behind that did an excellent job. Doing it with all of these guys, because you just don't have there's no way you don't have the TV time to do it. Now let's get to Eddie Kingston and CM Punk. We all knew CM Punk was winning. because CM Punk is one of these guys who absolutely is not losing to somebody like Eddie Kingston. Will CM Punk lose to, you know, a top guy like Bryan Danielson? Yeah, he probably would. He's not losing to Eddie Kingston. So we already knew Eddie Kingston was not winning. And sure enough, so as good a match as it was, and it was a good match, we still have this problem that WWE has a lot, which is we sort of already know, based on the worker, whether they're going to drop a match to a certain guy or not. Now, again, AEW says Tony Khan's doing most of the writing and whatever. Maybe he is. I don't know. But wouldn't this have been a perfect time for CM Punk to have been totally embarrassed by being overconfident and lose and then turn heel? That's what his fans want anyways. They don't want CM Punk as a face. CM Punk's fans, much like Rowdy Roddy Piper fans, didn't really like him, liked him better when he was a heel. He's much more interesting as a heel. This Mr. Nice Guy face thing isn't necessarily working, and it would have been a really good time for CM Punk to snap. And then they could have said, you know, that loss to Eddie Kingston brought out the real CM Punk. Here he was being Mr. Nice Guy and pretending he was so whatever, but the real CM Punk showed up when he got humiliated. And now we're going to be in for this guy. I would have thought that would have been a much better booking, Mike, than to just have CM Punk go over and extend a hand, which Eddie Kingston doesn't take and all that stuff.
Right. And furthermore, I mean, if you really want to do that, I know they're going to try and make Moxley a heel, but you know, you have Moxley, you have him snap, beat on Eddie Kingston for a while, and then Moxley make the save, or try to make the save, and then he beat on Moxley for a while.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much you could do. And I think that, again, AEW just has that problem of, well, we can do one or two storylines, but with all these people, we just can't. It's too much to handle. And it really is, especially if one guy's doing the writing. That would be almost impossible for anybody. I mean, you got the whole women's division to think about. You've got the tag team division. You've got a couple of titles. There's a lot of people. A lot of people on that roster. And you know that Tony Khan or whoever's doing the writing saying, you got something for me? What am I going to be doing next month? What am I going to be doing in the coming weeks? And if the answer is not much, I'm working on CM Punk's next move. I'm working on Daniel Bryan's next move. I'm working on Miro's next move. I'm working on Chris Jericho's next move. You got to be like, where do I fit in? I'm not Chris Jericho. I'm not Moxley. I'm not CM Punk. I'm not Bryan Danielson. So where do I fit into this mix? That's where all their attention's going. And if all their attention is focused on these huge names, what do I get out of this? See, that's the problem that I think AEW is going to face in the very, very near future, Todd.
I absolutely, yeah, like you said about the CM Punk thing, he should have been a heel when he first came in, not a face. But since AEW messed that up, they're looking more like Kingston more to the heel than CM Punk last night.
See, I tend to agree with you. If CM Punk signed a contract with me, and I don't know, you know, CM Punk is one of those guys that, you know, he's going to be one of those guys that says, I want only green M&Ms backstage. You know, he's one of them guys. I want everything my way. So maybe he insisted on being a face. But if I had my choice, I would have pitched the idea to CM Punk to come in, get all that fanfare, let the fans go nuts. Like they did. What a big pop he got, remember? Let those fans go absolutely insane and then have him grab that mic and just tear AEW down. Just tear it to the ground. And literally say, you know, here's the deal. I came from a federation that was a real federation. It wasn't much fun to be in, but at least it was real. This is a work of ego. Cody Rhodes and his buddies got together and decided we have too big egos to actually work in a real federation, so we're going to create our own federation. That's what they did. And ironically, they have to come crawling to me to try to get a little bit of publicity for it because they know it's failing because it's garbage. And everybody in here is garbage. And ironically, you're the guy paying my salary, and I'm going to tear it apart because I'm going to prove to you there's nobody here worth your time. There's nobody here worth your effort except the guy you're looking at. That's why I make more money than everybody else. That's why I got driven here in a limo. That's why I get these kind of pops and nobody else does. Because without me, this place is a joke. And there's not an athlete back there, not one of them. Not the WWE leftovers who couldn't cut it. Not the young, fresh faces who think they're good when they're really just indie guys who take bumps. Not one single one of you guys could carry my jock strap. I'm making more than all of you combined, probably. And I'm going to prove to you that this is CM Punk's federation. I can destroy it or I could bring it to the very, very top if I want to. Right now, I'm thinking I'm going to destroy it. Because then what ends up happening is, it is promoting young talent who step up and say, well, you might not think we're on your level, but we are. And then every guy he beats, you're saying, fuck that guy. You know what I mean? Instead, he comes in with this, oh, we're all in it together and we're going to make it great. And, Mike, I think it's a misuse of CM Punk.
And, frankly, think about this. Here's what else that would do. That would, as he's tearing down the guys, you know, the younger guys, that would, you know, kind of all of a sudden somebody steps up that you don't expect to step up and defends AEW, Kenny Omega maybe. You know, you'd expect Cody Rhodes to do it, but you wouldn't expect, because of what he's been doing, you wouldn't expect Kenny Omega to do that. But hell, he held the title a long time. And he's been doing this whole thing. It may be very well time for Kenny Omega to turn face, and that would have went a long way to in turning Kenny Omega face.
Well, I think you make a really strong point, because what you could have done eventually is have CM Punk say the real reason, you know, that what I'm saying is true, is look at Kenny Omega. Oh, he goes around, he's the belt collector. Yeah, he collects belts from every little indie federation who can't hire somebody who has a name. Now he gets into this little federation who's really just a glorified indie federation with a fat wallet. And he's their champion. He's a nobody too. None of you guys got names unless you bought them. I mean, Jericho has a name. But most of you guys, you just bought. That have the names. These other guys, they're nothing. Then Kenny Omega could literally have said, look, everything CM Punk said is right. I did go to small federations. I did work my way through the indies. I did bust my ass doing the best I can. And yeah, I'm proud of every belt I held, whether it was a small federation or a big one. Every belt I held meant something to me. This is the problem with CM Punk. Nothing means anything to CM Punk except CM Punk. And I'm not going to let him come into this federation who gave me my first real chance at a major, major, major federation and spit all over it. I'm not going to do it. You would have had yourself a really good feud because CM Punk can pull that shit off. CM Punk saying this is a glorified indie federation filled with has-beens and never-wases and never-will-bes. You've hired me because I'm the only guy here that's legit. You either got washed up 50-year-old past their prime fat rock stars, guys who got mad at Vince McMahon, or guys that couldn't cut it and with Vince and ran to the first federation that would take him. That's it. That's all you've got here. That's why the fans pop for me, because they know I'm the real deal and all the rest of you guys are, I'm just carrying, you know, I'm carrying your weight on my shoulders. That would have definitely started a feud. And again, like Mike is saying, then you get your younger talent. You get your Darby Allins. You get your Sammy Guevara's to say, screw him. But they're not quite good enough. And he is winning, and he is proving his point, and he is saying with every win, what did I tell you? What did I tell you about your roster? Bunch of little never-was's and never-will-be's and some tired old hacks. Then you find that guy that you really want to promote as your future, that young, you know, 25, 27-year-old guy that you say we're going to have him around a while. Maybe that's not Kenny Omega, but whoever it is. And that's the guy that steps up and humiliates CM Punk. That's the guy that steps up and gets that surprise victory where people are like, oh, shit, that's his moment. That he, CM Punk just made that guy a star. That's what you're supposed to do for your money, Mike. And I'm just not seeing that happen over here.
Right. And look, if you didn't want to do that with CM Punk, you know, you watch that thing last night when they had the match with you know, our favorite guy, you know, with his ring. He won by hitting the guy with the ring and stuff. That's another guy you could use CM Punk to turn face. MJF.
If MJF ever turn, could you imagine? Now, they're probably setting MJF up for CM Punk anyway, with CM Punk being the face. But could you ever imagine, in your wildest dreams, turning MJF face? That would be the only thing that would do it. You know, that would be the only thing that would do it, is to have MJF say, I thought I was bad. You know, and people said how bad I was, but the one thing I never did is I never spit on this federation. I never said this federation was garbage. Because if I think this federation is garbage, what good is it for me to be the champion of a garbage federation? What's CM Punk saying? You could easily take the belt. What good is the belt? The whole federation's garbage. You're talking out your ass. And you're talking out your ass because you went to the UFC and you got your ass kicked by some fighters. And now you're feeling like you need to get in here and pick on some guys that you think are either past their prime or too young to be able to stand up to you. You're wrong. You would have had something there. I'm telling you, if that angle was pulled off where CM Punk was mocking AEW and mocking the young talent, saying the young talent's going nowhere and the old talent's just here for a big fat paycheck. And I'm here for a big fat paycheck, but at least I'm still relevant. At least I still get a pop. The difference between me and guys like Chris Jericho and Jon Moxley and Matt Hardy and all these Miro and all these people is WWE said get out. WWE been calling me on the phone every single day saying please come back. And I could have walked over there if I wanted to, but I didn't. And maybe I will when I'm done destroying this. You could have got so much out of that. Because fans would have really said, we were looking forward so much to CM Punk coming back. And for that to be the first thing he said is all you people are following a garbage federation filled with has-beens and never-wases. Wow. That's an impactful statement. And I think the fans would have turned on him quick and said, this is bullshit now. And for every win he got, it's just going to be that much more sweet when he loses to one of their young guys. Pick the guy, and you tell CM Punk from the very beginning, this is a guy we think is our future. We're building you up for some big matches against big names, but you're winning them. But this guy here, this is what we're ultimately going to shoot for. He's the guy who's going to beat you because we're going to build him, and you're going to help us build him. That's what happens. It's exactly what happens. I don't think Punk would have had a problem with that. Just pick the right guy. Or even, you know, if he wanted to help pick the guy, say, who do you, you know, what's your thought? Who do you think is our best shot at the future here? Who do you want to work with and put over? You know, The Undertaker recently said something that I found very fascinating. He said, as much as I like Brock Lesnar, and I do like Brock Lesnar, I didn't necessarily think Brock Lesnar needed to end my streak. I wanted the streak to end. But he said, imagine how much better it would have been if I beat Brock Lesnar. Person to beat me was Roman Reigns. because Roman Reigns beating me. He goes, now Roman Reigns did beat me, but the victory didn't mean so much because I'd already lost. If I had never lost and Roman Reigns was the guy to beat me, I think the WWE would have got more out of it because Brock didn't need that win. Roman did. I think The Undertaker is 100% right, Todd, and that's why, you talk to the athlete themselves, too, and say, what do you think, and who do you want to work with? I think it would have ended up really good.
I think you're absolutely right there, like you said, like you said, The Undertaker about not wanting to end the streak. Vince didn't want to. He didn't want to have Taker to end it, but I think Taker did the right bright move to end the streak, the WrestleMania streak.
I mean, whether you agree with ending the streak or not, and I particularly don't, if you were going to end it, I think he's right, Mike. You end it with a guy who's going to be your future for a long, long time.
Right, and that's exactly how you end it. And, again, you're right again with CM Punk. I don't think he has a problem saying, okay, you know, if pick your guy, pick your future. If it's Jungle Boy, if it's MJF, if it's Darby Allin, if it's whomever, pick your future guy and set me up, and I'll lose to him. You know that's just what it is. And like we said, I mean, look, you watch that pay per view, and they're starting to seed a possible split between Wardlow and MJF. Maybe MJF flipping or maybe Wardlow flipping on MJF. They're starting to seed that now. Now, we don't know who's going to be the face or who's going to be the heel, but they're starting to seed that now.
I agree. If I had handled this completely with CM Punk, I would have had him go after some names first. Have him go after a Matt Hardy or have him go after a Miro or have him go after somebody that was a WWE guy first and say, what'd I tell you? Has-beens. I told you I'd beat him. They're has-beens. And then have him go against some of your lesser homegrown guys. Beat them too and say, well, never was it. Told you. They got nothing. But then you got to come across that one guy. Whoever he happens to be, doesn't really matter. Whoever you say, we really think this is going to be our future, no matter who it is. I would make a very strong argument that if MJF came out to defend AEW, he would get a huge pop. And it doesn't mean you have to turn him face-face. It just means he has to have a big problem with CM Punk. And if he says, look, you know, I don't give a damn one way or the other about these fans, but I'll be damned if I'm going to let you sit here and tell every single person in that locker room, whether I like them or not, they bust their ass. And you sure as hell don't, for your money. You know, you would have got something out of that. You would have been like, wow, this is going to be freaking awesome. And who's going to be the guy that teaches CM Punk the lesson that AEW really is a company to be, you know, to be a contender? It's not has-beens and never wases. See, that would be a really good pitch to get. And if you want to turn CM Punk face later on down the road, go ahead and do it. You know how easy it would be? I'll tell you how easy it would be. It would be as easy as having CM Punk, the night after he loses, coming out and say, I planned all this. I never believed one single word I said. I knew AEW had some great talent. But you're not going to get them to show how good they are by patting them on the ass and telling them they're wonderful. You're going to get there by telling them they stink. They suck. Prove it. He proved it. See, that's all you'd have to do. Simple as that. Have CM Punk say, it was a plan. I knew this place had such potential. But I also knew that some of the guys backstage that were WWE leftovers were getting lazy. I knew some of the younger talent were a little bit nervous and scared to really excel. So I knew if I came in here and I lit a fire under their ass, we could take this damn federation somewhere and we're gonna. That's it. Now he's a good guy and everybody's happy and you've got your conclusion, Mike.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the thing. And look, And look, we know who basically who the core is right now. You know, when he's there, it's Cody, it's Kenny Omega, it's MJF. To some extent, it's Jungle Boy. You know, I do like Luchasaurus, and boy, that guy, for a guy that size, to do some of the things he did in that match last night. Incredible, but you know that's your core there, and right, you know, we know that this contract, this deal with CM Punk and Daniel Bryan and people like that is not a long term thing,
right?
You know, it's not a thing that's going to be 3-4 years down the line, right?
Right. That's right.
You know, CM Punk's in his 40s and Daniel, if he's not there yet, Daniel Bryan's knocking on the door, right?
Yeah, he's there. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, right. So you got that going on. So if they're not going to be here for the long, long term, then that's what they should be doing. They should be built. Those two guys should be building up talent. Yeah, you want to build Daniel Bryan up, and if you, I get it. I get what you. You were sort of building Miro, you know?
Yeah.
And building on Miro. And look, there are people that we haven't seen in weeks, you know, including people like, I don't know, the Varsity Blondes and stuff like that, you know?
Yep. That's what I mean. So if you're going to do that, see, here's what I think. AEW has the talent pool. In fact, they have too much. AEW has the talent pool to be a top federation and give WWE at least be their equal. And in terms of ratings, even. What they are missing, in my opinion, is the more in-depth storylines that drive a different type of wrestling fan. There are some wrestling fans who would say, oh, some guy I saw in the Indies in a federation in New Jersey is now going to wrestle some guy I saw on the Indies in a federation in Connecticut. Both of those guys are really, really good, so I'm sure this is going to be a good match. So I'm going to travel 3 hours to go see that because I think it's going to be a good match. There's no story. You just know they're two guys who are good wrestlers. The indie mentality. But the indie mentality does not draw 2 million ratings, 2 million people ratings. You have to have those storylines where you're interested in those characters. I think my example, CM Punk would have driven a lot of fans into saying, who's going to be that guy? And by the way, you could have had some young guys literally say, I want to be that guy. I want to be the guy that teaches CM Punk that I'm not never was and never going to be, that AEW is a serious federation. I'm going to be that guy. Hell, you could have had Cody Rhodes say, I'm not going to let him do that, to say that about my federation. You could have had a bunch of people. But when they all end up falling, it's going to be that one guy that CM Punk doesn't beat. That one guy that you say, wow, that was sort of unlikely, and he did it. He had his moment. And then just as easy as that, CM Punk can flip around and say, that's what I was waiting for. I beat a lot of guys here, and I got fortunate to beat a lot of guys here. But guess what? Every single one of you guys I beat, you're better now. You're better because I lit a fire under your belly. You're better because you were growing complacent. You're better because all you were worried about was we're getting good ratings and fans like us. You need to have that fire under your belly, and now you do. You all hated me so bad you wanted me to be that person. You took it out on. And I lit a fire under your asses. Now you're all better for it. And that would have been it. Then CM Punk is the big hero, right? And he's the guy who single-handedly improved AEW and brought their talent to the forefront and showed them you really can do this. You just needed some tough love. Every one of you guys can succeed. Every one of you guys still got it in you. Whether you're 40-something Christian or whether you're 20-something Sammy Guevara, you still got it in you. You proved it. That would have been great. What a great angle. Who wouldn't eat that angle up? And then it would have made Punk look very unselfish because they would have said, well, you know, look what he sacrificed. He could have come back and been the big hero and got all the cheers. Instead, he knew he was going to get booed out of the building. He knew fans were going to be hurling shit at him. But he did it for the good of the Federation in the long run. And now the Federation is better for it. How is that a bad angle for CM Punk? That's a very good angle for CM Punk. I don't want to see a bunch of matches that's just, oh, these guys are good and so are these guys, so this should be a really fun match. That's fine when you're going to the indies. This is not the indies anymore. You have got to step up and you've got to make some long-term storylines, and you know you got to because you've done it. You did it with Hangman Page and Kenny Omega. You've done it before with several other people. But you get lazy and you're doing the WWE thing of, well, we're only going to do one or two and the rest we can't be bothered with. Well, you're going to have to start being bothered with them if you want to achieve that level of success and get that kind of viewers, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said. I remember back in the 80s with the WWE, they didn't just have, like, one angle for the WWE championship. They had all kinds of angles with different people with or without titles. Including in the lower mid-card guys, they gave them angles and storylines to work with. Without any belt or anything.
Yeah, I mean, I think the prevailing attitude from some of these guys is, oh, we can put FTR in there against the Lucha Bros. That doesn't even need to be a storyline. Because they're such good athletes, they're just going to wow the crowd with their moves, and that's good enough. That's the indie mentality, Mike. But the indie mentality is never going to draw that 2-point-some-million fans.
Right, and think about this. I've gone back to this thing. Back in the day, Chris Adams and Terry Taylor had a tag team, and eventually Taylor turned on Adams, right? After a while, that was a long-term storyline in the Mid-South at the time, or UWF, whatever you want to call it, and he ended up turning on him, and what happened after he turned on him, those two guys had a feud in the UWF at the time, but they also carried that feud to Texas, to Memphis, they went through different federations,
right,
with the same two guys in the same feud, you know, because
yeah,
it was such a good storyline, they carried it on.
No, I agree with you. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, if you're a wrestling purist, Full Gear is going to blow away Survivor Series. I have no hope, and I have no false hope, I should say, that it's even going to come close. Survivor Series is not shaping up to be good. The teams are, at best, thrown together last minute, no real reason or rhyme or reason to it. I don't see any of it being super exciting. It almost feels like it's a last-minute throwaway pay-per-view that they're not putting much effort into. So Full Gear is going to win that because Full Gear, I would give it a B+. I know there are people giving it A minuses and A's. I'd give it a B+, but I will tell you this. For 4.5 hours, which is entirely too long, it still held my interest. I'm not sure for 4.5 hours. If the Survivor Series is 4.5 hours, I can promise you I'm going to fall asleep. I can promise you that. So I'll give them their due there. But my warning is because I want them to succeed, not because I want them to fail. I do not want AEW to fail. My warning is you're going to have to start expanding your audience, and the only way you're going to do that is to come up with viable storylines for a lot of these characters. And you may have to make roster cuts because your roster is ginormous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And some of these guys feel like they're just like guest stars that come on once in a while. They don't even feel like they're in your federation. It's like, oh, so-and-so's here this week? Okay, we probably won't see him again for 6 months. That's not good. There's no point in a guy going over that you're not going to see for 6 more months. That's the Brock Lesnar syndrome that everybody hated. Run with who you got. Start some storylines. I don't care what anybody says. Cody Rhodes is not going over anymore. Cody Rhodes is the, and if with every single time that he books himself to win a match against somebody that the fans think should have went over, Cody is turning heel. Now, they're doing it in a very subtle way where Cody doesn't know he's a heel. Cody's like, I'm still a good guy. I don't know why you're booing me. But they're booing him. And I think now he's intentionally playing to that, just not letting you be aware of it. But if that's the case, then Cody's going to have to subtly start to face some faces. Because you're not going to get a whole lot of heat facing Andrade. Cody's going to have to get into some misunderstandings with some guys who are faces. And we'll see where it goes from there. Sometimes it just seems like it's such a vast, vast, vast federation filled with people that I get lost in the vastness of it. I'm like, what's this guy again? Is he a top guy? Is he only here for a while? Who's this guy again, and what's his gimmick? There's too many. It's too many people to follow. You got to understand that the WWE may have a bigger roster, but they got two separate shows. Well, you don't expect to see Raw guys on SmackDown and SmackDown on Raw. So they can have double the roster, but they're only really dealing with half that roster in one program. You're dealing with the entire roster in both programs. And in doing that, if you got to give CM Punk time on Wednesday, you got to give him time on Friday. If you know what I mean, or Bryan Danielson gets that time, or someone else gets that time, and at some point you're going to have to start using some of these guys you don't use so much. We already see Brian Cage saying, "I get no time there. I'm not happy." There's other people now who are complaining we're not getting the time we were promised. I know Andrade has grumbled a little bit about, I want a faction and I want to do more than this. Aleister Black came out the other day and said, I pitched an idea for the House of Black that's way beyond what Tony Khan wants to do. Well, see, this is the problem. Everybody can't have a feature storyline or a feature part in the show when you only got so much airtime. And these guys are going to feel left out, Mike. And when they do, this is when you start getting disgruntled locker rooms.
Right. And think about it this way. You know, here's how good Christian is. He, in letting the match end the way it ended with what Jungle Boy did at the end of that match, he's helping make Jungle Boy. Because Jungle Boy, you know, Christian was going to give him the concerto, but Jungle Boy took the chance, gave him the concerto, and won the match. Christian helped make Jungle Boy.
I agree. I agree with that. And that's the job of the older talent. Christian was the champion, I get it, for a while, one of your main champions. But at the end of the day, okay, you gave him his minute in the sun. Now his job is to put some people over. Bryan Danielson's going to be the same way. Give him his minute in the sun, and then his job is to put people over. CM Punk, give him his whatever amount of time you promised him in the sun, and then he's going to have to start helping you build your future superstars. Because this federation can't be about him. If this federation turns out to just be the CM Punk Federation, it's not going to work. Not going to work. And I would argue that CM Punk would have been much better starting his career as the heel, ending it in AEW as a face, than vice versa. But that's just me. Anyway, as far as the pay-per-view goes, I was happy with it. Again, 4.5 hours is a long time. I was not, like I said, I was not bored. It kept my attention, but it's still a long time. And truthfully, I don't think any pay-per-view should be more than 3.5. I just don't. I love wrestling, but 4.5 hours worth of it is a lot of wrestling. And, you know, I love pizza, but I can't eat 3 pizzas. You know, 4 or 5 slices, and okay, it's time to take a break on the pizza. So, again, this is what ends up happening, though, when you feel the need to use everyone. And I know how Tony Khan feels. Well, I have all these people. I need to use them all. I really need to get try to get them all in. See, that Vince McMahon used to do that. And then what's it end up happening? It's the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. where everybody's just a leftover, and then everybody starts grumbling, saying, I'm in that thing? Boy, I must have no worth to this company. I don't want that to happen to AEW. I don't want there to be guys that say, oh, you're going to be thrown in a battle royal at the end for no real reason, just to get your ass on television. People just like, whatever. I already know I'm worth nothing then. I don't want that to happen. I'd rather have a medium-sized, steadfast group of people who understand their position and what they're doing than a whole bunch of people wandering around saying, I thought I was promised something more, or I thought I was an up-and-comer, or I thought I was the big cheese, and nobody really knows their position except for a couple of guys. So I think they're going to have to sort that out and sort it out fairly quickly, Mike.
I think so, too. And you know, they have less of a problem with the women's division because they know who their people are. And really, what that championship match in the women's division for AEW did was prove that Tanara Conti was dreadfully underused in the WWE, you know, because she came out looking really well. You know what? She can thank, even though she lost the match, she can thank Britt Baker for that.
Yeah, I agree with that. And speaking of which, you know, there's some rumors they may be hiring Taya Valkyrie. Well, I hope they do. She's come out and said that she feels she was released from the WWE for no other really good reason other than her age. And she said, if you're 37, which I guess she is, and you're a man, they consider you still pretty much in the prime of your career. You still got 4 or 5 really good years. With a woman, they're already saying, well, that's it for you. And she said, I don't understand that. I can point you out. Top level, main stars in wrestling who are in their late 40s that are men. I can't point you out too many that are women. She's right about that. She's absolutely correct about that. But again, let's not go crazy. Let's not go politically nuts here and say it's anti-women. No, it's not. You got to understand that some of the women at the age of 30-something are saying, I want to cut down. I want to start a family. I want to settle down. I don't want to be on the road so much. I want to have a home. There's different priorities. So a lot of times the women do that by choice, as opposed to the men who say, well, I can still make my money while my body's still allowing me to, and then I can rest up when I'm older. So I don't think it's all misogynistic. I don't think it's all about, oh, you're too old, you're not good looking enough, because there's plenty of women in both of these federations I wouldn't exactly call pinup models. And they're doing well. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know what the deal was with Taya Valkyrie. My thought process there is I think that when they changed her, they realized they ruined her. That's what I think. The gimmick they gave her in NXT was terrible, and it was so not her that I think they realized we don't have anything because we don't need the type of character that she portrayed normally in the Federation. We got enough of those, and I don't think they knew exactly what to do with her, Todd, and I think that's why they released her.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said, with Taya Valkyrie, when they released her about her age, and, you know, it's just wrong. She's a very talented wrestler. She could have been a Raw or a SmackDown Women's Champion, but they just didn't want her.
See, I don't even know if it was about her age, Mike, more than it was about ruining her character to the extent that, because if anyone ever did not fit the character that they gave her, boy, it was her in the NXT.
Right, and think about this. When she first signed, who was still there and what was she doing? Who was still there? Sarah Logan. What was she doing? She was doing that Viking. This was after she'd done the whole thing with Ruby Riott and all that stuff. she was doing the whole Viking thing, right, was Sarah Logan. Well, that was basically for a good chunk of her career, Taya Valkyrie's thing, right?
Yeah. No, I agree. See, and also what you got to understand is somebody, you mentioned Sarah Logan, that's a perfect example. I think she got pregnant or whatever, but she could have come back to any federation she wanted to. A lot of people would have signed her. She wasn't all that interested. You know, she's just like, oh, well, I've been there, done that. Sometimes, and men and women are not the same. I understand that there are women like Becky Lynch and stuff that'll get pregnant, have the baby come back and really put their, you know, bodies on the line. But there are an awful lot of women, more than men, I think, who say past a certain age, that's it for me. I'm going to settle down. I don't want to end up walking with a limp the rest of my life. I don't want to end up with back problems. I don't want to end up, you know, walking with. And then there are men who just say, well, you know what, I'm just going to bust my ass until I'm in my mid-40s or maybe 50, and then that's it, and take the money and run and live a comfortable life the rest of my life. It's two different value systems. So I don't think it's all about age. I really don't. Now, some women, maybe. It kind of depends. It depends on what your worth is. I mean, the WWE had the fabulous Moolah wrestling. She was well over 50. Well over 50. Mae Young was wrestling well over 50 for the WWE. So I'm not sure it's that. I think what it is, it depends. Like, I could see them saying, well, once Lana gets into her, like, late 30s or early 40s, maybe her worth to us isn't going to be as great because she's not this young, beautiful, hot whatever anymore. She's going to be a, you know, middle-aged lady. It's going to be different because her worth was, I hate to say it, but her selling point was more her sex appeal than her wrestling, right? Now, I'm sorry if that sounds misogynistic, but look, that's the case even with actors and actresses, singers. Okay, why do you think Britney Spears is not selling as many albums now as she did? Why do you think Madonna's not selling as much now as she did? Because when you get into a certain age, then it's like, well, they're not that young, beautiful, hot, newcomer. That's what ends up happening. Because you're kind of selling yourself. And it happens with men, too, if that's what their worth is. It happens with guys who are, you know, actors, celebrities. Look at Justin Bieber, you know. I mean, once he gets older, you think Justin Bieber is going to be a hot commodity? No, he's not going to be. So it's not just the women it happens to. It just depends on what it is they sell about you. That's why when Fabulous Moolah made two old women who hung around the wrestlers and stuff, it was brilliant because what you got to understand is Moolah and Mae Young didn't have any kind of image like that. I know there were an awful lot of people who didn't know what Moolah and Mae Young did when they were, you know, before that. But they were hard asses, okay? They were like, Moolah was mostly a heel. And certainly a really mean and you know, evil heel. And so was Mae Young to a certain extent. And to totally recreate themselves as these two lovable old women who are still out for a good time at their age and stuff, it kept them in the business. It kept them relevant. It got them airtime. And it kept them around the business that they loved in a different capacity. And I think that if you really love wrestling, someone who understands a lot of what I did and a lot of my worth was due to my looks has to be able to change it up. Look at Trish Stratus. Trish Stratus was hired because of her looks. But she took it very seriously, and she said, these looks ain't going to last forever. I'm going to learn to wrestle really, really well. And even though she's still, you know, beautiful, the thing is, she can come back and people say, oh, yeah, I want to see her wrestle, because she can. Because she took that time. And if Trish Stratus wanted to reinvent herself in her 50s and do something else, manage or do something, she could do it. Beth Phoenix, same way. Because they reinvent themselves. But if you can't reinvent yourself, if you're just like Eva Marie, I'm sorry, then there comes a point where you're just like, well, I don't know. Now, Taya Valkyrie's not that. Taya Valkyrie is still a very, very, very good wrestler. And I'm almost definite that Tony Khan will sign her. If he doesn't, he's really missed the boat, because if there's anything they are missing, it's a great women's division, Mike, and I think that she would add to it tremendously. I'd love to see her against Thunder.
Yeah, I think so, too, and that's the thing. I mean, she was, before she went to the WWE, she was with Impact. Her and Morrison were with Impact, and that's why they eventually got married. And it seems to me that she's not the type to go away. She's already 37, so she's a little bit late to make the decision to go away to have a baby, you know, in her life. Just like Natty is a little bit late in her life to have a baby, but that's neither here nor there. Natty's another one that could wrestle another 10 years, you know?
Yeah. She's a lifer, later, yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Yeah, she's a lifer, you know? So she's trained most of these girls anyway, but yeah, Taya Valkyrie needs to be in the WWE. And to tell you the truth, it needs to be not in the WWE. It needs to be in what you call it. And frankly, think about this. Charlotte Flair is another one that look at her in her tremendous shape, and she's not looking right now to have babies, right? To
right.
quit and have babies, right? So you could get another four or five if she's at the top of her game and cares about stuff. You can get another 4 or 5 years out of her before she eventually may make the decision to get married, have babies, whatever, you know. And then maybe she comes back after that, you know.
Yeah, let's make no bones about it. I said, and I mean it, that I think Charlotte Flair's worn out her welcome in WWE. She's just one of those characters that it got boring. And it's the same song and dance, and it gets old after a while. And her character got old. But under no circumstances am I taking away anything from her athletic ability. She is one of, if maybe not the best, female wrestler in the WWE. I mean, Becky Lynch may be the most charismatic and the person the crowd is most interested in, but she is not the athlete Charlotte Flair. She's not. Now, Asuka's close. Shayna Baszler's close. Shayna Baszler is close as far as an athlete, not as a wrestler. Shayna Baszler still has a lot to learn about pro wrestling, but as far as a pure athlete, certainly Bianca Belair is extraordinarily close. You could make an argument that they're interchangeable. Naomi's right up there. But a lot of these others, I mean, Charlotte Flair is right there as being one of, if not the best one. It's just that she feels like yesterday's news to a certain extent, Todd, mostly because maybe the way they've been using her.
I think you're absolutely right there, like you said, about Shayna Baszler. Great athlete, but she needs to learn more to wrestle than just being an athlete in UFC and everything. At least she's safe in the ring with, mostly, as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, she's fairly safe. I mean, she did knock Asuka's teeth out, but I think she's fairly safe. I mean, yeah, if you're going to have a real fight, then I'm pretty sure I'll bet on Shayna Baszler, Mike. But as far as pure athleticism, you know, Bianca Belair and Charlotte's got to be pretty close to 1 and 2.
Right, yeah. And think about it. You know, another one of these women that could be around the WWE for a while, and if they use them correctly, is Asuka. Because she's already had her kids. She went away for a while, I guess, in Japan and had her kids. And then she came and ended up signing with the WWE. So she could be around even at 40 years old. Asuka's just turned 40, I think. And so she could be around a while for the WWE if they use her correctly. That's the problem with the WWE.
Yeah, Asuka is one of those... You know, there's always an exception to every rule. You always say there's an exception to the rule. Asuka's the exception because you don't really – I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but I look at Asuka and I don't know. If you told me she was 40, I'd say okay. And if you tell me she's 28, I would have said okay. It's very tough to tell how old Asuka is. She doesn't look very – to be honest, she doesn't have any look of being – you know, older than anybody else on the roster, put it that way. And once in a while, you'll run across people like that. AJ Styles is another one. I mean, you put AJ Styles in the ring with a guy, and you say, oh, he looks a little bit older than this guy, but this guy's 25. AJ Styles doesn't really look like he's in his mid-40s. So there are exceptions to those rules where you just say, wow, I didn't realize that person was that old. And then there are just the opposite where you say, oh, I thought that guy was much older. You know, just the way they look or the, just, I don't know, there's something about them or that person. Either way, I'm not sure ageism is really what I think. Maybe there's a little truth to that in the women's division, but I think there are other reasons. I think there are other underlying reasons. Now, as far as AEW is concerned, I have no doubt in my mind that if they continue on this type of a run, they are going to build their fan base. But I also have no doubt in my mind that they are going to get under the skin of some of their people in the locker room. So let's see what Tony Khan's move is. Does Tony Khan, at the end of the day, have the quijones Vince McMahon has? Does he have the quijones to say, look, CM Punk and Danielson, they're here for a cup of coffee. We're going to use them for everything they're worth to promote our own guys. Same way now with Jericho and some other guys. It's time to start promoting our young guys. These guys that we gave a shot to that we're not really doing much with, they're gone. After their contracts are up, we're not doing this anymore. I mean, why are you handing big contracts to Mark Henry and the Big Show? And what are they doing? What in exactly the blue hell are they doing? Nothing. Oh, can they add backstage? Well, how many backstage voices do you need? You've got Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, Jake the Snake Robinson. How many backstage voices do you need? So I think it's time to cut the wheat from the chaff and say, this is the 40-man roster or whatever you're going to be that we're running with. And everybody else, yeah, we might bring you in for an occasional match, but you're not signed to a contract. It'll be match by match, case-by-case basis. Otherwise, I think they're just going to overflood the system, Mike, and if that happens, I don't think that's good for anyone.
Right, and that's the thing. And look, I don't know the particulars on Punk's contract and what you call it. I don't know the length of time. I don't know Daniel Bryan and stuff. You know. The whole thing with the Big Show, okay, I get it. The Big Show is the Big Show, and Mark Henry is Mark Henry. But they're not doing anything. It's not like they're gonna be Punk and Bryan and
no.
Danielson, because
no.
At least with those two guys, They're getting in the ring on a consistent enough basis that make you say, okay, I can basically look at that contract if it's a short term deal and say, okay, fine. They're there. They're gonna be there for the term of the contract, and they're gonna be being used for the term of the contract. I can see that with the Big Show and Mark Henry, I don't see it. I mean, yeah, they've had him do some commentating on whatever on
right.
Friday nights, but you don't Mark Henry. I don't think they need four guys on Friday nights.
They don't. Look, those guys were the equivalent of putting Drew Barrymore in Scream. Remember that when Drew Barrymore was Scream starring Drew Barrymore, and she was in it 5 minutes. They just wanted to use their name. Let me say this, though, about AEW. When they were first forming and I was taking a look at their roster and I was saying to myself, minus Chris Jericho, who I knew was going to be the champion. I knew they were going to make Jericho the champion, and they had to. He was their biggest name. But I'm looking at that roster saying, who's the guy who could be the champion and really be their homegrown talent, so to speak, that they can say, we developed this guy and he is ours to an extent. And I said, Hangman Page. From the minute I seen him, I said, that's the guy that if you're going to use one of your guys, quote unquote, your guys on top, that's the guy. I think that he's got the charisma. He's got the star power. He's got the drawing power. He's got the ability to connect with the fans that you need from your guy. Now, Jericho had it in abundance. Moxley had it in abundance. We get it. But they got it from the WWE. Your guy is Hangman Page, and you got him where you want him now. Now let's see, Mike, if this makes a big difference, because this was a guy that I, from the very beginning, picked and said this is a guy I'd work with toward being my future.
Right, and that's the thing. And think about this. You know, we talk about the future, who could be it for the right now, Page is the present. Yeah, yeah, you could probably end up at one point or another putting the belt back on Kenny Omega. But no, yeah, you're right. And look, to me, if you look at Paige, he kind of has the feel of a Stone Cold Steve Austin with a little bit of mix of a James Storm.
Yeah. Yeah. And he has a certain charisma that I think some of the other guys don't. I just think that this is the guy that if you want homegrown, so to speak, talent to be on top, this was probably the best choice you could make. I don't think Omega has that. Omega has, like, his ardent fans who are big fans of his style, and then he has people who really don't like him that much and think he's overrated. I think Hangman Page is one of them guys who you could really run with, and you could make him something. You know what I mean? You could make him your Roman Reigns. You could make him your whoever, the guy that's your guy. He feels more AEW than anybody else you've had, and that includes Kenny Omega, because Jericho wasn't AEW. Moxley never felt AEW. Omega was a belt collector, so, you know, Page feels AEW. I think that's a good thing. It took him a long time to get him there. I understand why, and I agree with why. But now that he's there, I think that this is the time now you have to run with him, and you have to prove you can develop that talent. Right now, he's your top guy, but you can develop him even more. It's your job now to make that guy special. If you can't make him special, then unfortunately, I don't know if you got what it takes to be the equal of WWE, because that guy's already has the feel of somebody special. If you blow it with him, I don't know who you got, Todd, who you're going to have any better shot with.
Well, you're absolutely right, like you said, about what Hangman Adam Page. They took their time to build him and Kenny Omega up for like over a year to get where they're at last night.
That's true.
And like you said about Hangman Adam Page, he could be the face of AEW.
I really think he could be. AEW's got all their ducks in a row now, except for the massive, massive lineup that they can't use all of. If they can now start to whittle that down a little bit and keep the cream of the crop and the guys you really need going forward and the guys you're really going to use, I think the sky's the limit for AEW. I really do. We'll talk to you on Tuesday.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. WrestleChat Radio is a Savage Blade production.